All right, welcome back to episode 62 of the Slide In Podcast.
Jumped right into that thing.
Yeah, we're jumping into it. Got to get started somehow. These things can kind of wane on in the beginning. Kelly Gallup, Braden Anderson, as you all know. I want to start with this quick shout out to Zephyr LaPlante. He sent us a whole bunch of hats. This is just one of them. I think he's a fan of the podcast, outfitter up on the bow, but he sent us a bunch of hats, so all the boys are in them now.
We got lots of buddies up on the bow.
You got some friends who guide up there, too?
Yeah. Pauly Teapot, Jeff, Black Horse Outfitters, or just a bunch of them. They're all cool.
Have you fished the bow before?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I want to make it up there one of these days. I've heard great things.
Yes, it's a great... Yeah, I've never met any of them I didn't like up there. But then again, they didn't know I was an American. So.
Right. Well, anyways, thanks for the hats. These are awesome. Go check them out. Troutfever.ca. And Kelly, do you have any other stuff over there you want to show off?
I have a couple corrections. I don't know what you started up so damn quick. I don't know where all my stuff is. One, last week when we were talking about bugs,
yeah.
Twice I said Ephron when I was talking about Epeiurus.
Yeah.
I'm listening to it and I'm like, Ephron? I haven't fished an Ephron in 25 years.
I just assumed it was something I didn't know and I was going to keep my mouth shut.
It's a bug in Michigan. Well,
gotcha.
I don't know, they probably got them around here someplace, but never seen one. But yeah, I'm sitting there watching it and then I wasn't going to call you out and tell you that you missed putting that photo up, but you'll fix that today, I'm sure.
Yeah. Photo of what specifically?
Huh? Yes, that.
The journal entry from
I guess Billy
Robinson. 2 weeks ago now, right? Because the Bucky episode will have aired already.
Yeah.
Our timeline's all screwed up. It's very complicated. Yes, I forgot to put a picture of the journal in. I was asleep at the wheel while editing.
And then I got this from Craig, which you'll take care of that other thing. Probably it's already taken care of, I would guess. Craig Rendeau, I think. Rendeau, I don't know how you spell your name. He's really cool, though. I know Craig. He's entire, been around for a long time. Look at this picture. 2.7 largey, 27 inch, that is.
Just let me see this thing for a second.
I like to talk about the old days a lot.
And I thought you were just going to say you like to talk.
Well,
like,
that part's really? Pretty foregone conclusion. But, and he, you know, and it's just kind of cool because I like to talk about fly design. And in the old days when we had like no materials and shit, and this is a perfect example. He sent me a scrambler, which is basically a wacky rigged worm that's made out of floating beads and a rubber tail. Pretty cool, but nothing compared to, if you're not watching this is sad because this is just old school innovation. This is a, for those of you that didn't grow up in the 60s and 70s and probably 80s, a hair curler, right? It's just really cheap foam. And so he made the body out of the foam. Obviously it's rubber legs and just, everything's just handmade. Here's the template for it. And then squeezed together and put something, I don't know what he put on it. I mean, we used to put caulk on them. But then all the other stuff, I don't know. But
yeah,
it's just, and then the epoxies came out. This doesn't feel like epoxy. I don't know what it is. He didn't tell me. But I just think it's, you go back and you just, now everything's made for us, right?
Yeah.
But to think that you took a freaking roller and cut it into a piece and squeezed it. I mean, a lot of people did that. They did
it.
A lot of guys did this stuff and gals did it back then. And I just really dig it. It was a lot of...
That's super cool.
A lot of innovation, you know?
Yeah.
And just pretty fun. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about before we move on, I screwed up my other correction. I was talking hatches and hatches too, and then I can't find my Western Johnny, the corrector. This is hatches too, for those of you who haven't seen it, if you're looking. But I did mention Ted Fasiglia, and... He's, you know, Ted's photos, I was saying, I mean, when you look in this book, I mean, they just popped open a page, right? I mean, when you look at this and you, from a resource perspective, to see every bug you've ever wanted, to see it hatching, to see it swimming, you know, stills of everything, There's that cripple pitcher that we were talking about.
Yeah, the one we put in last week.
Right, there's the one from my whole book design of a single wing bent.
Right.
Everything's in it, right? And then I totally screwed up, and I feel like a total dipshit because I'm a big fan of all these guys. But I said Morris and Hughes, and it was Haefeli, and it was Haefeli and Morris. Hughes, excuse me. In that Western Mayfly hatches, feel like a total. They're both. I was fans of all those guys, and I'm sure Skip and Dave did stuff together too, and I know they did. But that's a pretty big one when you guys. When I'm saying it's my favorite book in the world, and I have the wrong author, and he's the head, and it's his name first, right? Rick Haefeli, who did also, and I've spoke about him before. He did this Scientific Anglers. Trout behavior or something. It's one of the best videos I've ever seen in my life. All kinds of underwater footage. Yeah. I mean, it was so ahead of its time. And it really made me feel bad when I did it because I was always a huge fan of Rick Haefeli. And that felt pretty stupid when Johnny says, you got the title wrong and you got the author wrong. I said, shit.
But the general gist of it was there, The appreciation for it's
book,
there.
The book is the best. I had Dave write, so Hughes. So, but I felt really, when I did that, I felt pretty bad about it. But I did say it's the best book. And by the way, by the time you see this, we will have all those books in stock again. We let our books kind of go to, moved in there, and we let things. I think we've got like my books on the thing now. We used to have a lot.
I think so we'll have your books.
We'll have them so you can get them if you don't.
We've actually seen
places to get them.
We've seen a lot of comments about these too. Like, there's a lot of people who are still very interested in fly fishing books.
And yeah,
we talk a lot about the YouTube side of it. And you mentioned the books a lot, but we've talked a little bit about it. But in our new store, we're gonna have a hell of a library in there.
Big.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, I just think you just can't lose your history. I mean, you can lose your phone, but you'll never lose your book. You'll always go back to them. You make notes in them, or you don't, or whatever you do, you highlight or whatever you are. There's something about a winter day. Like Richie Strollis told me, oh God, it's Streamer Love Fest this weekend. It's like sub-zero, 30-mile-an-hour ice storm, wind, shit. Richie said he was talking to Dally and said we might have to do it
remote. Like Zoom?
Yeah, because
it's Friday, January 23rd right now, too. So I'm sure this is
weeks later. And it's a badass storm. No offense, Eric and all my buddies in Texas, but they showed more about Texas than they did. The East Coast going to get 2 foot of snow and 40 below and all this wind. And it says, Dallas is going to get down to 5. I'm like, oh, wow.
Oh, no. Although,
every morning in June?
3 inches of ice everywhere across the state. I mean,
that's different. That's, and they get massive, they get massive power outages from that load. But he was saying how, what a shit weekend to have it. What, that is such a drag.
That's bad luck.
Because everybody's down
there. Did you see there's an exploding tree warning across some of the Midwest?
Yeah.
What's the science behind that?
Like, freezes.
It just freezes and then the wind blows and they just.
Yeah, that part of it. And sap and all that kind of crap and freezing and.
Got it.
But Richie was saying that he was talking about these books. He says, these guys are going to get, they're going to get their asses kicked down there. He says, but not like the punch you're about to get in your face. And he says, it's going to be 2 foot of snow, foot and a half to 2 foot of snow, 20 below zero, wind chills. I'll be sitting on the couch feeding the wood stove and watching football. But I guarantee he's got a book. You know, sitting on the thing, sitting there when you're freezing, scrolling your phone. This is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure. No, books books are still worthwhile. So check
them
out. We'll have them soon.
You
know that. Yeah, I've declared they're worthwhile, so you guys can go read them now.
I was speaking from somebody.
If you listen to me that closely, you got problems. All right.
I already yelled at you for not calling that out, so I don't have to. My little post note.
You're not going to save that for
up your effing A game.
You guys don't know how scary it is to walk in here after knowing that you screwed up. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Kelly.
You fucked up. I know.
Effed up.
I said the other one.
Oh, and then there was one guy that had a, unless you're going to ask questions about the Slick Willie.
No.
Guy said, if Kelly's such a right winger, why did he name the Slick Willie after Bill Clinton? I didn't. I named it after William Devane, who's a movie star, who's one of my best friends. One of our, Bill's lived here forever. And he's probably just as left as Bill Clinton. So I'm surrounded by you guys. I mean, look at, who do I have on my side that works here? No one. Surely, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm surrounded. Johnny says I do it on purpose. I don't think so.
I don't know.
I just don't know if I can ask on the interview, but I'll figure it out.
Yeah, I'm not. I was not a psych major, and this your psyche is not one I want to touch with a 10-foot pole. So we're not going to dive into that.
It's living proof that you can get along.
If you haven't met William, Mr. Bill Devane.
There's a picture of him somewhere. Where's it?
Oh, up top. Right up top.
He's up there flipping everybody off. Yeah. There's another picture you're not going to take or not going to post.
No, we'll see. I'm, you know.
For those of you that are in that younger, if you watch Good Bad News Bears, that's what everybody says. Or if you're on my side and you watch Fox News, you'll see gold commercials. That's what everybody everybody comes in and says to Billy, oh, I saw you on the gold commercial. It just pisses him off. That means
they didn't know.
You're one of them. Well, no, it means you're on the wrong side of his road. And so, goddamn Fox News launchers.
Yeah. I remember one day, my first year in the shop, me, Jeremy, and I think Daniel Bragg sat in here just laughing our asses off at a video that Bill did for Campfire Lodge. And I don't know who cut it together, but they clearly did like a bunch of different takes in a bunch of different spots on the river between the lakes. And it's an advertisement for Campfire, which is a great spot. And, you know, he's like, hi, I'm Bill Devane. Above me, 10,000 trout in the Madison River. Below me, 10,000 more trout in the Madison River. It's like they had him say the same line in 9 different spots on the river.
For a guy who
just cracked me up.
Henry Winkler's telling me that he just thinks Bill's the greatest character actor in history of the world. It's, I mean, pretty high praise when you're coming from Henry, because he's a producer, really. But he said he's never done a double take.
Really?
He says he just memorizes everything.
Yeah.
And he's telling me about doing the commercials for Rolex or, Lexus or something. Lexus it was. He used to be the spokesman for Maxwell House Coffee.
Really?
Then he became the bad guy on Knott's Landing. So I think they booted his ass. His image was bad, right?
Right, yeah.
So then it was, but then who picks you up? Lexus.
Yeah.
And they make a fortune doing those.
In terms of the endorsement deal, I'd probably rather take a Lexus than free Maxwell Coffee.
I don't. It was pretty crazy. The real money, but the voiceover stuff. But he just does it, and he just I remember watching that going, you could have given him any lines on earth and he would have just sat there and did it.
Right.
Just does them. That's what he does for a living.
Now he's got such a great voice, and he's, I remember.
I copy his voice constantly in the show.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Yeah, always.
half my one-liners came from him.
I remember when we were building the North Slide, there's like nothing in there, and he stops by. He's coming back down from Bozeman. And he stops and he goes, hey, I just dropped by to see what the hell you're doing. I thought I might take a piss too, huh? And then, goes, uses the bathroom, doesn't close the door.
Never.
It was so funny. He just slapped his hands above the toilet on the wall.
He's a horse guy.
Or on the wall behind the toilet. And then, he just walks out without even looking at us and goes, well, see you next time. So funny. Such a great voice. Great guy.
Hot in here. It's freezing outside. Got more clothes on. I almost wore them puffy pants.
They're the best pants in the world.
I mean, it was freezing this morning.
Now it's cold.
Now I'm like, I came in and turned the heat up to 75 or something.
I think I've worn those squalla pants for 15 days straight. I finally put on a real pair of pants today. I went ice skating yesterday in the squalla pants. Outstanding for that, if you guys are big ice skaters.
It's too demasculating for me to do that when Mel's there.
We're playing hockey.
But I mean, Mel was out, and she had on yoga pants and a sweatshirt, and she was shoveling horse poop. And it's like 5 below 0, and I'm inside going, I'm looking at them puffy pants going, well, God dang, it doesn't feel good right now.
Did I ever tell you about when I went to pick up Did I tell this on the podcast? We went to go pick up a trailer from your house when I was moving stuff up to Bozeman the first time, whatever, a year ago. I went over to borrow your flatbed, and I had a down hitch.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get the...
Yeah, I couldn't...
Did I tell this on the podcast?
No, you did. You told me. But.
So I'm like struggling. I can't figure out how to get this trailer on my hitch, and Mel pulls in. She gets out of her truck. She's all camoed up, covered in blood. And I'm just like, hi, Mel. She's like, hey, how's it going? I'm like, I'm struggling. She's like, all right, let me come help.
It's awful.
And immediately she comes over. She's like, yeah, you're doing this wrong. She just swaps out the hitches so I don't have a down hitch anymore. And I'm like, here, I can do it. She goes, just let me.
The chains were too long. You can fix that.
Yeah, she put it on. And then, and of course, she just grabs the antelope out of the bed of her truck, slings it over her shoulder, and walks it into the house. I might have made that up, but it was something like that.
No, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah. I was just like, okay.
Masculine as shit.
Yeah, she's way more manly than me.
I've been back in trailers into boat launches since I was 16.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Right? Yeah.
And she's way better.
No, she's really good. Yeah.
I tell you, but we were at the, I might have told that story before. We were up at the, I think it was at Hebgen. This guy's just totally not getting this concept. There's people waiting, right?
Back in a trailer.
Oh, God. Yeah. And he's got a pretty big butt. And I says, hey, you know, he could have got up and punched me in the mouth for it. He says, you want my girlfriend to do that for you? And he looks at me. I says, dude, she just put mine. And he saw it, too. He saw her get out of the truck.
It's a big truck, right? Too. 8-foot box on a 2,500.
Yeah, that's
a big box.
And so she backs, and she's walking back. He goes, yeah, that'd be great. And it goes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
No, she's got...
If you're a guy, it's not supposed to be the way it is.
No.
Girls are supposed to play dumb even if they are smarter. Well, they always... They're always smarter than us.
Yeah, they are.
It's like, oh, I could never do this, baby. Well, let me show you how to do it, little lady.
She opened...
Maybe turn your wheel the other way.
Does she open the pickle jars, too?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
She does tell me that, oh, you loosen it up.
Oh, yeah. that's how you can tell that she loves you.
Yes.
All right, let's jump into some questions now. This one comes from Tyler Glick on YouTube. He says, hey, guys, I'm looking to buy my first drift boat / raft this summer, but I'm a complete noob as to what I should be looking for. What would you recommend for an angler looking to get their first boat, raft versus drift boat, how to gain experience rowing before taking on gnarlier rivers? I'm located in Utah, so mostly rowing local rivers, but also plan to take trips to other western states. So I'd like to be able to take on diverse types of water across the western U.S. Thanks for all the helpful info, guys. Keep it up. Did you see that one comment that said, wow, it's like a rodeo every time Braden tries to read out loud?
No. Whoever said it, be thankful I'm not doing it.
Yes. That's how I feel in my head. I started thinking about, whatever. All right, let's jump into that question. I obviously have some takes on this, given I bought a couple boats and I'm pretty recent in figuring this stuff out and not super knowledgeable. But
well, I would say
a lot of experience,
a few years. I would say if given, really need to know the rivers you're going to be on. If you're on the Madison, a raft is spectacular. Because especially when you start, because you get to bounce off shit.
Yep.
And there's two types of people, really. There's raft cats and there's hard boats. I absolutely hate fishing out of a raft.
I despise
it. Shit's everywhere. If you got a self baler, you know, stuff's going up and down. If you got a hard floor, it's going under the. Everything's always going under your stuff. But I've fished at them. I've got them. I've got two rafts.
Yeah, self-bailing rafts, like your lines getting caught.
Yeah, but if you've got a hard floor, like if you do the...
The metal frames in there.
San Juan frame
from
air, or not air, from downriver. I've had three of those, or two of those. And they're spectacular. You're on a platform, but you really got to get control of your line in the front. You really need a basket in front. Mm-hmm. Because even though it's not it's a self-bailer... You're above it. Your line still goes down beside the frame.
Yeah.
And then the water's going, you know, if you got waves like here, that your floor's going up and down constantly, right? Mm. And so, but dang, it's so nice. And if he said Utah, lots of small rivers down there that you just like to huck that thing over the edge of the deal. It's really a creature comfort thing for me. If you can row a raft, you can row a drift boat. It's a small learning curve. If you remember one thing about boats, you just back away from everything. But everybody tries to row forward and they crash.
That's all the raft guides. That's raft guide influence.
They can do that.
All they do is push.
Yeah, they can do that because they can just smash into the thing and who cares? When we do it, people go out of the boat, right? But, and I have, like I said, I have both and I always have. I ran rafts in Michigan.
Yeah.
I didn't even freaking whitewater. But I did it so we could drag the sumbitches, you know, half our landings. You get there and there's a tree over it or whatever and it's like, oh shit. And you just dump it over, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I ran pumas. I had one super puma, which is a 13-footer, but mostly the smaller ones. And I particularly liked them on a one-man deal, right? But I still much prefer a hard boat. If best of all worlds, you'll have both. Eventually, you will anyway, just like you do.
Yeah.
And I mean, those small like fly crabs.
Yeah.
Those things are pretty sweet. I mean, you know, when they first came out with that, they brought the prototype up here and I was really impressed. I know Richie Strollis rode one he still does, I think. I mean, they can, done right, they're great, but it's really about where you're going to be with the thing.
Totally.
You know, if you're going to run whitewater a lot, you know, like the still water here or, you know, I don't, really big whitewater is not as big a deal to me. It's like, as far as you're not going to be fishing on class four water very often, the comforts, if you've got designated landings, I mean, there's all kinds of questions you got to ask you. Like in Michigan, shit, you can't imagine the shit they would call a improved landing.
Oh, yeah.
Two track, get to the end. How do you turn the sumbitch around? You have to take your trailer off your boat and then you barely get your boats around. Or you like bushwhacking. You're just out there just throwing them over places, right? Rafts are great. You aren't doing that with a hard boat. And I ran a lot of short pram boats, not like Koffler, but close, like the Fishrike 11-footer or 13-footer. They were small boats, but they're still you need two pretty strong people to move it around over shit, right?
Yeah.
Not rafts, that's right. So you got to ask yourself what you're going to, what's going to be your most, you know, what you're going to use the most. And then the size, like I said, if it's a big whitewater, if you're going to go to the upper salmon or, you know, the loss, I mean, shit, you're going to have a monster raft, right?
Yep.
But if you're going to run here until you get to the bear trap, and even that, other than the two rapid sections, I mean, I ran that in my 13-footer.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. Like,
but I mean, but it just depends what you're going to fish. And the other thing, you really think about who you're going to be with. Right?
Totally.
Are you taking your wife and kid, you know, and it's really more of a pleasure thing and you're going to fish a little bit? Them rafts are pretty fun, right?
Yeah.
They're pretty, it's like a river on this river. The scary part of this river is the rocks that are 3 inches, 2 to 3 inches under the water that you can't see. And you're sideways and you crack one of those things and man, shit goes everywhere.
Yeah, you get a 40-mile-per-hour wind.
Yeah,
and all of
wind's
a sudden,
blowing you sideways.
Shit happens quick.
And that's, well, they're, wind's hard in a raft.
Yeah, so I think.
But I mean, there's a lot of things to consider. Mostly for me, it's creature comfort. How much shit do you carry with you? You know, are you overnighting? And is that what your deal is? You don't really, it's not the fishing comfort you're worried about. Rafts are great. But if it's fishing comfort, I just much prefer a hard boat.
Yeah,
don't buy short hard boats thinking you're going to get speedy. You know, that 16-foot, 16 LP, Galactus 16 LP, I think is the most versatile boat ever.
Yeah.
You're getting bigger ones and you get a lot of wind effect, you know, high side boats versus low side, you know, a low side boat, or a high side boat's not, it's designed for big water.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little water within a 500-mile range of here, that would mean something.
Where you want that.
Where you would need it to not take on water.
I would say there's days, and I've always been fine. I've got an LP, 15-footer.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always been fine on the South Fork of the Snake and that, but I can't tell you there aren't times, or like even on the big hole in big water, where I wouldn't have felt a little bit more comfortable on the high side.
And with a 15 or 16 or any of that, again, you have to ask yourself, a 15-footer is great. I've had all of the boats. I mean, I've worked for Clackett for 20 years. I've had almost every boat they've had, I think. And I've had skiffs, you know, Scotty Hall runs a skiff.
Yep.
it doesn't add a post, but I mean, it's skiffs, you know, they're just shorter, lower. If I'm two man and if I fish, it's like you and me every day, that would be hell. If it was if it's you and me every day, I would have no problem with a shorter boat.
Yeah.
But one of the things that, and everybody says, oh, the maneuverability and all this stuff. The thing that kills me about having rowed one of these things since, 40 plus years more, when you shorten the boat up, you bring the ass end forward, the person behind you's sack is right here. I'm not a fan of that, right? And and they're really close. And when they cast to the left bank, they follow through and they bonk your head with their rods a lot.
Yep.
That was a killer. I had my, what was it? But if I had two people, it was the funnest boat ever.
Yeah.
Right? Now I hardly ever fish with a third person, right? And so that distance, which also on the shorter boats sinks your ass end, which takes away a little bit of that draft mechanism that keeps your boat, when it, you know, it's supposed to draft water under it and start a hydraulic lift that lifts you up.
Yep.
So when you're back rowing, that water's going under you like this, and you got a lot of maneuverability.
I've always called it sliding. It's like if you're in a power boat and you get on plane, right? It's like there's less surface tension. All of a sudden, that boat starts moving freely once you are no longer going the same speed.
You got a Johnny in the back of the boat. Yeah. Now that thing's pushing.
Then you're doing a kickstand, and
It sucks. And so a lot of things to consider. I mean, start with how many people you fish with, the water you fish in, creature comforts, rowing, rowability. You got to be pretty freaking good to start thinking about that shit. And you got to spend a lot of time on the water. I mean, I watched Scotty Hall runs a skiff. He has no problem with two guys in it. I thought it worked me, right? Yeah. I really loved all my skiffs on a two-man thing. Loved my 15-footer when I had that for two-man. I am a gear junkie. I developed the fly pod from Klacka so I could carry more shit than it should be. I mean, I'm probably overweight just from the freaking fly boxes.
It's the best boat when it comes to storage.
I got everything I want.
Not even close.
I do set it up so I don't hear anything rattling. Put that C-deck in those things. I put foam in mine. Just I don't like listen to shit roll around. Mm. I do not like. You get in boats and you hear the spare oar go. 10 minutes with a little bit of hard foam, just flexible hard foam. Everything stays where it belongs. Put shit over top of it. You never see it again in your life. And it's like, but it's what you like, that, but the fly pod, that's a love or hate boat.
Yep.
I also take a 13-minute meditation every day, and that was part of the design of that.
Kelly's boat is really good for naps.
I stop at lunch. I eat my lunch, and I take 13.
Yep.
I'm on that deck. It's like, oh, this is heaven.
I'll try to remember to throw a photo in here. I haven't been good at that recently, so I don't want to hold myself too accountable. But a photo of your fly pod.
Oh.
Just in case people don't
look
know.
Look it up.
It's great for dogs, too.
Yeah, and I was telling John Stenerson, who runs the place, Klacka, I told him last year when I get my pod, I said, I don't want that back seat. I want to have a... Because originally I had it designed, so that came forward much further, and there was no... It was just dry underneath there.
Yeah.
And I just wanted more deck. Mm-hmm. The seat's cool. Yeah, that's fine. I wish that was further, but seats are a pain. They're the most line killing things on earth. Line goes around them. You spin around like this and
yank on them.
And then people say your line delaminated. Yeah. Under your ass with that seat delaminated.
Yes.
And so, but I wanted it for it. And he says, oh yeah, a lot of guys make those. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do it. They take the seat out. They're for dog decks. Mm. And so
enunciate that one clearly.
Huh? Yeah, I know. So, as I said it, I was
that was close.
Me and my clearing my throat.
Dog, huh?
A second. But a lot of people. He says, but I said I just sit on it. I don't care about that chair.
Right.
And so, million things to think about other than brand and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, there's so many good boats.
Yeah.
There are really so many good boats. And it's like if there was only one good car, we'd have just one Chevy, 1500, whatever, Ford F-250, whatever it is, right? And it's just it's like everything else on earth. Tools are tools. Boats are just freaking tools. They are nothing more. you have to get in one. You have to row it. I've rowed almost every boat made, I think, to this point, including some old 17, 18-foot Willie's Wood ones. Mm. Ray Schmidt had one of those. Yeah. Giant son of a bitch. Rowed like a champ. Mm-hmm. I mean, wouldn't want to get it in too techy. It's heavy. I mean, it was a high-sided four-year water from where you're from.
Right.
It's a true Mackenzie River.
Yeah, boat, yeah. Right? If you're out there, high-side stuff's good.
Yeah, and the front end's like, boom, you know, yeah, my ass.
Take some waves.
Ray could see over it. Yeah. I'd have to go, okay, corner.
Yeah, I don't think Kyler ever sat down, and Kyler had this boat, an old.
Oh, yeah, he had a high side.
Was it a Hyde or was it a Klaka?
Hey, sorry for the quick interruption. It looks like Kelly sat on his mic pack and turned it off, so he's got no mic the rest of the show. I think he still gets picked up on my mic, so I'm going to try to boost that as much as I can, make sure you can hear him. But apologies in advance and blame him, not me. Groovy.
I think it was Clack.
Yeah, blue one. A high side. We called it the War Machine.
Yeah.
Kyler's 4'8" on a tall day. And yeah, he had to row standing up the whole time. It was really cute. You guys should look it up.
Think everything you're going to do. Think of what you're going to do.
Yeah, so let's simplify this, right? So gear storage. Drift boats are far and away better. Especially you hear about a lot of people breaking rods and rafts because a lot of the rod storage,
a lot of moving parts in a raft because everything's exposed.
Yes.
Your anchor ropes are exposed.
There's no interior.
All your shit's floating in your boat at some point. If it depends on the bailing system or the floor system, but eventually even in a hard bottom, like a San Juan frame, which I was a huge fan of, shit floats around. It just does. A lot of water comes in, it floats around, and so you got to have storage. It's all waterproof. Mm-hmm.
Cost-wise, generally rafts are going to be a little bit less, but not. They're
a ton.
Pretty similar.
Depends. The fly crafts, and I'm not endorsing these guys. I've never had one. I've sat in a couple, and I really like them, and I think they're pretty damn reasonable.
They've gotten a lot better. So when my first boat, my dad and I went in on a Watermaster, Kodiak, whatever the big one is. It's their three-man boat, and we were comparing that to the Flycraft at the time, and we both decided upon raft. You know, I went through this, right? It was like neither of us had ever rowed before. Goes, well, what's going to be safer? Probably an inflatable that we can bounce off shit and, easier to put it. And we didn't have a trailer at the time. And so we were folding it up,
another
consideration, put it in the back of the truck. And so we went raft and we were deciding between this Watermaster and the Flycraft. And this was the first iteration of the Flycraft. It didn't have a self-bailing floor. It didn't have like a real frame on the front of it, like a lean bar or anything. They called it the 6-contact point lean system, where you just have your feet spread out, touching the sides of the tubes and leaning back against the seat that spins. But they've gotten a lot better than that. I've rowed a couple of the newer iterations. Jonah's got one. Nate's got one. They're much, much better than those original ones.
Really, I mean, you look. I mean, drift boats are going to go new 12 to.
I think they're even upwards. 18,000. Yeah, they're.
I mean,
they're,
the trailer. Everything's bigger, so it's you got to have a bigger trailer, stronger trailer. Oars are bigger, stronger. Everything goes up in price.
Yeah.
But what are those things now?
Oh God, I don't know. They've got to be around 10 grand. Yeah, I think I bought my Watermaster for, I think, just under 6. Mm-hmm. And then sold it a few years later for 4. And I sold it just because I had 3 boats at the time and I didn't have space for 3 boats.
You need a trailer for one of those.
You don't. If you got a pickup, I mean, even you can put them in the back of your Subaru. I used to drive this little tiny Audi.
Back of my Subaru.
Not yours. No, I used to drive this tiny little old Audi, and I actually was able to get the Watermaster in the back of that. Now, I had to deconstruct the frame every time, which is a bummer, especially in the winter. But,
so anyway, we're back to high points, low points.
In terms of what Kelly said about knowing your water is massively important, do you ever think you're going to guide most? If you're guiding on, Missouri, Yellowstone, Madison, these kinds of rivers, most people are going to want to be in a drift boat because of the creature comforts. They're so much easier to walk around in with flat, solid floors.
You know, age is a relative thing too, because I have very few people once they're past a certain age that really want to play in a rubber boat.
Yeah, but the rubber boat, the one of the positives of that is, I mean, you can throw them in ditches.
Yeah.
And you can pull them over anything. They're so,
I did mine for it. I could actually put it on top of my truck either way and huck it over. You know, I'd come up and huck it over bridges.
Yeah.
Just huck it. And I, you know, never broke a frame, never broke anything. They're really, I was guiding a really big guy one time. I think he's a buddy of Herm Thomas's. Not giant, but I mean, he's 260, 270. And we're in Michigan. Everything is, for people that don't, they talk about Michigan a lot, if you don't know the rivers. And during the CCC days, they reconstructed a lot of the rivers because they scoured the rivers, logging everything, right? Mm-hmm. So everything was just beat up.
What are the CCC days?
Civil Conservation Corps or something like that. And it was basically jobs, giving people jobs after the Depression. And, and so they did. They did river restorations, and they took cedar, you know, there's cedar everywhere there, and they take like a 4 to 6 inch cedar, bury them in the bottom, you know, they pound them down and make these beautiful deflectors and fish hides and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
They're just gorgeous. And then they put, you know, put moss and dirt over the top of them. You give them 3-4 years and they just look like they've been there forever, right? Mm-hmm. Shit, there's some in Michigan that I know are still there today that are got to be, you know, 90 years old, they look perfect. They're just not 80 or 90, but I mean, a long time. What are they? 50 when I was there. Mm-hmm. And they were just, and they're just, there's all kinds of them. There's deflectors and everything you want to see. But they're made, what they were made with is 20 penny nails, which is a spike that long. And people used to break them too. They're like, I don't know what the people that did that. Well, I remember. We got in a really great fight once on the river with me and Billy Robinson. Some guy is just tearing them apart. And just because...
Tearing apart the deflectors?
Because the fish were under them.
Yeah.
They were salmon fishermen, so they wanted to snag them. But that was only in the rivers that did that. I was like, what an asshole, right? And so anyway, they got these guys pound them together. Well, you know, a big log comes down the river and hits one, breaks a tree, right? Breaks mm-hmm. a branch of it. They're just complex. They're all kinds of stuff. And I'm coming at it. And I don't see it. And I had never seen it. And there's a 20 penny spike sticking straight out of this thing. And I'm coming at this corner, intentionally going to get very close to rub it. I don't know if we had a fly in a tree or what we were doing. And I'm back rowing, but I'm not really that. I'm still away, but there's one branch sticking out that I'm going to, and I hit it dead on, that 20 penny, and bounced up. Didn't even scratch it.
Really?
Now, mind you, it's a old 20. It's not really, well, none of them are really pointy. They're kind of square-ended anyway. But I see it, it's like, I'm like, oh, shit, I just thought we were going to be like the Fred Flintstones, going to pop and blow us up the river.
Yeah.
So it didn't do a thing. So they're pretty damn, and I drug them over shit.
Oh, yeah.
When we get to landings, somebody would have to drag them. We might have to drag, like back in the day when Wahala and the Pier Marquette, you had to drag your boat, shit, I don't know, 100 plus feet up this thing.
Yeah.
And it's on a blind corner. So
you got a tow strap.
You got a highway. You got a 100 and some foot rope. You take off with your boat and you drag it across the freaking road. Now they put it downstream of that, which is really weird because I got to the landing and I had not known.
Didn't know where it was.
And you drag across and you have somebody there. And if their car's coming, they tell you and you start and you back up. So the rope goes down and the car goes. I mean, sooner or later, it was going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to be a professional clothesline when it happens.
I never had it. Never heard anybody get one pop. But anyway, we drag them up that stuff. Never did a thing to the bottom.
Yeah.
You see where the guy's using the most. It's really rugged areas.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're so durable. I've had two Watermaster boats. You know, took them through all sorts of junk. Dropping them off bridges with metals edges on them and stuff, and they've been so good. But
figure out what else you're going to do with the boat before we get done with that. Just think of all the stuff you're going to do.
Yeah.
And then, are you a hold and play guy? Like, you're going to keep the boat for 10 years.
Right.
You know, if you're going to do that, you'll figure out, I would rather have a hard boat if I was going to do that, simply because, and I'm not going to wish I had a, I've had both.
Yeah.
I've never been in my drift boat and wished I had
a raft.
I mean, other than if, like, you know, I just wanted to, I don't know, what, you want to roll that, just talk and bounce off of shit instead of having to row every second.
Yeah.
If you just wanted to drop, you know, go to the edge and drop anchor.
If you're learning, rafts are great.
Yeah.
Drift boats.
You say it's his first boat, but it doesn't mean he's learning. But
yeah.
I assume he is, but.
What did he say? He said something. Yeah,
a little more versatile, I would say, on the in rubber boats as far as landings. That's when I first started.
Yeah.
He says Utah.
Yep.
They got a lot of little rivers.
Where a raft might be really nice. Yeah. Great,
and probably impossible to get hard boats in some of those places.
Yep.
If you don't have a land, that's one thing. You got to have a, you at least have to have access to the river where you can back your trailer close to the boat. You can drag one. And you can't, I mean, on the clack, you're not going
to
hurt the boat.
I mean, I go, yeah, everybody is scared to hit rocks. Anytime I take somebody out on their rowing and they hit a rock, they apologize. They just go, you know, unless you, like, really crack one and we fall over, don't apologize. I mean, it's, you rub rocks, it happens. Everybody. That's why they say fear no rock on the side of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I want to mention in this is in terms of looking for used boats, because a lot of people, I mean, that first raft I bought, we bought new, but it really wasn't that expensive. Drift boats are really expensive, and a lot of people kind of hound the used market for it. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good idea to have an idea of what you're looking for and then be patient, because good deals come up. You know, Facebook Marketplace is a great place. Craigslist. By
the way, mid-April is not the time to buy a drift boat.
No, I've made every... when I bought my drift boat, I made every wrong decision...
April.
Yes.
April and May.
I made every wrong decision in the world. Now, I love my boat. I need to get it, like, refurbished, but it's, I think my boat is the best rowing boat I've ever been in because it's that 15-foot 05 to 09 LP, which is, you know, Scotty and Johnny said, get something in that range. Really quick, the things to look for when you're buying a boat, and Scotty told me these things and I did not do a good job of following through on them. Pay attention. Like, if you're going to this guy's place, check out their lawn. Look at the state of their vehicles. Are they clean? Are they in good shape? You know, does this guy take care of his stuff, this guy or gal?
When Mel and I were going to buy her trailer.
Yeah.
We're down in Idaho. We're right close to Oregon, I think, because we're north of Boise. And we're driving through horse country, right? And there's just people. I hate when people, you got a big yard and you park your shit sideways, your white trash. Just make it align. Make everything align. And they're just going like, look at this piece. Look, I don't give a shit. Look at all the shits everywhere. And we're driving down this road. It's just one after another. And I see this one place coming at us, and it's got a white fence. And I'm getting closer, and his cars are parked beside each other. I says, God help you. I said, I hope that's where we're going to get the trailer. We pull in. This trailer is immaculate. It's like brand new. Everything he owned was in right angles. His driveway is swept. I mean, he's got a blacktop driveway. It's swept. Mm-hmm. He's out cleaning the trailer he's selling.
Yes.
It doesn't need to be cleaned. No, you're selling it, right? Exactly what Scotty said.
If Scotty ever lists a boat for sale... buy his boat.
Yeah.
Daniel Bragg sells something, buy his boat.
These guys get home. We've talked about Scotty's protocol that we make all our guides do, because Scotty pulls in, backs his trailer, you know, lets his boat up, puts his hook, you know, the rear end of his Suburban up.
Yep.
He has this protocol, and he cleans everything.
That's spotless.
Everything. He's freaking pedals on his
car. You should see his house. Nothing is out of place.
Ever. Well, you ask Scotty and Scotty, same thing.
It's spotless.
Nothing ever.
No.
But yeah, that's a great deal.
And then, you know, the other things to look for specifically, like if you're buying a drift boat, look at the chine, right? That's the outer edge of kind of what would contact rocks. And like if it's really beat up, you know, that's going to cost you money down the line to get it fixed. The one I bought, pretty beat up. It had been a guide boat on the Madison, but
This is the worst river in Montana.
Yeah. It's, I mean, this.
And even then, I've carried boats for 3 years and never had a I've never had a leak.
Yeah. No, I mean,
I had shit that launched people out of the boat.
Yeah. We've crushed rocks in my boat, and like they're still solid, but it eventually is something you'll, you know, if you're going to have a boat for 30 years, that you'll likely need to fix. The other thing, you know, look at the bearings on the trailer, look at all the mechanics on the winch.
If I use trailer, just replace your bearings.
Yeah, you should do it immediately. Yeah.
You should do it every
year. You can do it yourself, or you can pay somebody to do it. It's like $110 to pay somebody to do it.
It's an annual event. You should do that every year on your boats. If you don't, you're just dodging bullets.
Ooh, you're risking it. Yeah.
You hear that whine starting, and you're going to go, you're going to get 1 mile, and you're going to go, oh, shit.
What was the story of Johnny where he's listening to some fish show so loudly in his car that he didn't hear that it had his boat exploded or his bearings exploded and like
sure did.
I think it was a piece of the tire was flapping and it wore a hole through the bottom of his boat.
Pauline and I pulled into the Jefferson one time and I could hear it, and I said, do you hear it?
Yeah.
He says, yeah, what's that? And so we don't make it through Whitehall, and the tire, you know, the whole bearing just falls off, the wheel falls off.
Yeah,
it's all just sitting there, right?
Bad news bears.
Back, there's a parts store right there, and the guy's sitting out front. He goes, "Ah, you made it farther than I thought you would." He says, "I heard you guys coming when you got off the highway." The whole time, right? But yeah, it's not good. Just do that.
Yeah,
this isn't a maintenance program. Keep going.
No, it's not. But yeah, those are I think the main considerations. And then, you know, once you're ready to roll, like, have your financing. Or however you're going to purchase the boat set up, ready to roll, because these things go fast, especially in these, you know, rocky mountain areas. You know, I think I was the first guy to respond to the ad I responded to, and I responded 20 minutes after it got posted. I looked at it that day, and there were already like 9 people behind me in line.
Yeah.
So, and that's when I said, okay, can I have the weekend to secure the cash? And they said, yeah, sure. I came back here. I didn't have a bank here. I know I told this story, but I didn't have a bank here. You know, it was I bank with Chase, and they were closed in Bozeman. And I went to Kelly, and I said, Kelly, is there any chance you have this cash? And he said, yeah, I keep finding wads of hundreds I tucked away when Obama got elected. He came back in 9 minutes with all the cash I needed, which is great.
The boot brigade. Yeah, that was fun. I still do it once in a while.
Yeah, that's funny. So I think we wore that out pretty good. But basically, for diversification of activity, raft is better. If you're fit, you know the rivers well, you know the landings. They're all like
creature comforts,
gear storage. Hard boats, better for that. All right, next one. This one comes from Soli JT on YouTube. He says, hey guys, love the pod and appreciate the time and effort you guys put into this more than you can know. A couple weeks ago, you guys were talking about what keeps you going in this whole fly fishing tying pursuit. I've been fishing my whole life and fly fishing almost exclusively for the last 32 of my 47 years. And I finally figured out what does it for me. It is 100% the eat for me. I've grown to realize that getting a fish to eat how I want to eat is the drug. My question is, when you get to that point and you are willing to forsake numbers for stocking larger fish or fishing water a certain way, how do you continue to judge your progression as an angler? I personally love to fish dries and hoppers on undercut banks and to dedicate as much time as possible to streamer fishing. I'm totally okay with catching less and hunting more. Sometimes I feel like my progression stagnates for long periods of time. As you said before, bad days are the days you learn, but how do each of you measure your progression when simply putting fish in the net no longer seems to be the main goal? Thanks for everything you do for the sport. Best, Josh. Josh, not solely Josh. That is a great question. It got me thinking a lot. I know I referenced it a little while ago. I was talking about how I felt like I was flatlining in my progression, and really what that was a handful of days where I wasn't getting fish to eat and I didn't find the giant I was looking for. But I'd never really thought about this in terms of, okay, now that I'm in the stage where I just want to hunt big fish, how can I measure that I'm continuing to progress without actually putting big fish in the net? Because that's just not something that happens all the time.
That's a tough one, because at some point you will have put a lot of fish in, and I'm not sure what that magic sauce is. But, I mean, for me, it's just continuously at the vise.
You know,
it's continuously wanting to, you know, I'm pretty well set in my mind that there is no secret. That it's not something that's going to get cracked ever in history by anybody or anyone, by gear, you know. Hell, I fished bait all my life. Bait doesn't always work.
When you say something that's never going to get cracked, is this the idea that you can't make a fish eat?
Yeah, you're going to go out and make it happen, which ends you at the point where you just want to be there. Mm-hmm. And that's a natural flux. You're up and down and up and down and up and down whether you want to go. But if the eat's all it takes, meaning if the eat's it, you know, that's why the fly thing, it to me, is the developing new flies. Mm-hmm. Just to see, you know, then you can go into what kind of eat do you want. You want a reactionary eat? Do you want a slow motion eat? Do you want, you know, topwater eat? All streamer, by the way. If that's what you said, that's what he's talking about, right?
He does. He said throwing hoppers against banks. I think he likes fishing dries and streamers mostly.
A hopper on a bank, for me, it's an ant. But, I mean, an ant in a bank, it's the best. Mm-hmm. I mean, truly, at this point in the game, for me, it's better than most streamer eats. Mm-hmm. I mean, streamer eats are cool, but there's something about a dry eat that just... It's different than everything. And so is a totally reactionary, streamer bite. But I know that's a really hard one. You just really got to like to go there.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about this so many times. I know virtually no guides that fish.
Right.
I mean, there's a point where they just seem to not want, you just have to want to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I always wanted to be that guy. I don't like to go out. I wouldn't go out in this ship if you paid me, right?
No.
This weather. I don't go for that.
10 degrees with a 40 mile per hour north wind.
But I used to. I used to think this is the day I'm going to have, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's how you made yourself go. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is the day.
That's
never was.
That's just what I imagine being inside Johnny's head feels like. Today's the day. Yeah, every day's the day.
I did it until I was 60.
Yeah.
No, this is the day. Sooner or later, that databasing comes up and says, nope, it really never did happen.
No.
That football game in the wood stove sounds really freaking good right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I mean, you go, when you know what it's almost impossible to answer because it's different for everybody. Mm-hmm. Some people, I mean, just really truly like to be out there just standing there.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think the older you get, the more of that, the less you have to chase the herd. You know, you just go down and there's, just see it. But for me, if it was what he's saying at E, that dry thing, hoppers, I mean, that slow motion hoppery, that just, I mean, how, you can't
hard to be.
Topic. And then the streamer thing, I would just tell you that you could go pure dry. You want to see how people keep it going? Look at Russ Madden. I mean, he'll get this notion in his head, like last 2 years ago, he's just going to fish giant streamer dry flies.
Yeah.
Right? And there's a guy who truly doesn't care. He could go a month and not get one.
Right.
Knowing that it's going to happen, and when it does, he's fine.
Yep.
Right? But you have to he and Alex did that podcast, and he was talking about the two guys that want, the people that want to go do that, they say that's what they want to do, and then 2.5 hours in, they look through you.
Yeah.
You don't really want it. You just want to. You want a freaking pitcher's all you want.
Yeah, you want to get a big one.
So I don't know how to answer your question other than you just do what you really dig and enjoy those downtimes. Like you were doing, you're like, what am I doing wrong? What am I doing wrong? You probably aren't doing anything wrong. Things got to add up.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like measuring your improvement when fish aren't hitting the net. I think it changes depending on where you are, right? If you're more of a novice angler, you should probably try to change things and actually get fish to hit the net. But if you're truly hunting big fish, they don't come around that often. Then to me, it's, there's a couple different facets. It's like, it kind of comes down to your, maybe three, I might add to this though, cause I'm just making this up as I go. Casting, retrieving, and then the so-called mental game. And the mental game, I'm going to put fly selection, reading water, you know, engaging with your environment, understanding sky colors, times of day, these, you know, water temperatures. I'm going to call that all mental game. And then, and a lot of that ties into your, you know, retrieve and casting as well. Those kind of dictate what you're doing there. But if you're, and I'm not talking distance casting, but accuracy, going, okay, am I looking ahead of me and picking the best places to throw these flies? And am I actually executing on where I want to put it? And then, you know, all right, cool. I put it through the hole I wanted to. Well, did I land it within 2 inches of the bank of where I wanted to, right? Like I keep going back. I used to think I was good at casting until I got in the boat with Howard. And I went, okay, there are so many ways for me to improve in search of this perfection, which nobody ever actually achieves. Well, he kind of does, but, and then the, you know, the retrieve thing is, we've talked a lot about retrieves, but speeds, depths, cadence, action, all this stuff. And then, you know, evaluating that, did I just do one thing all day and no fish hit the net, or did I do all the things? What else could I have tried, right? Like, give yourself a grade at the end of the day and try to be sort of harsh with yourself to see where, you know, patting yourself on the back does nothing for improving.
I was thinking when you were saying that, I couldn't, even all, that's all just keeping yourself happy. If you're seeing fish, I was thinking streamer stuff, because for a dry is super simple. It puts his head up or he doesn't, right?
Right, and you either get him or you don't. Yeah.
And so, but in some respects the same. All I was thinking about what could keep me going is, one thing for sure is I study the eats. I study how the fish eat my fly and where they come from. Dave Johnson, one of my best friends in history, Dave and I fished together all our, you know, he'll come out this year too, but smartest man I've ever known in my life. Still loves to fish, which keeps me happy because he still likes to try to figure things out.
Yeah.
If he still has something to figure out, I'm just happy as a pig in shit.
Totally. Because,
you know, I asked him what he was doing. Well, I'm working on this new pump for insulin pump that's the size of like this, and it's going to, I'm like, okay, that's enough. I don't, I'm tying a fly, so just leave me alone. And it's like, but, you know, he's still fascinated by it, right? But and so I look at it like I love to study the way a fish comes. And the point about Dave was he was saying, I've got to get better at my strip strike because I'm fishing upstream, because he'd never fished upstream until I took him out here and did it. Mm-hmm. He's on the Manistee and he goes, I keep missing the fish. Well, the fish is coming downstream, so it's a lot harder. It's not T-boning your fly, right?
Yep.
And so a super techie, you want to see somebody that's super great, they know how to pause their fly as it, without stalling the fly when the fish can see it, and they can stop it right before he eats it, and so he can eat it.
Mm-hmm.
But most people are going to stop it way too far, and the fish is going to turn off it and run away.
Yeah, and then they don't move it again.
Yeah, yes. And then nothing happens, right? So one of the things that fascinated me, which I told, I don't know, two or three of these ago, about going with Johnny, and I said, I really didn't care if I fished because I'm getting all the satisfaction of watching, and I get to watch his fish come to his fly,
mm-hmm.
right? And we're rowing, we're on the snake. It's, you know, it's good. You can see most of the time. And I get to see, without the anticipation, without the adrenaline rush coming to you that, you know, might speed you up or slow you down, I can watch what happens. And did the fish come from the top side, underneath, vertical, sideways? Well, then you get to start putting it together. Did he, you know, he always did it on this, or, you know, he always came one way. It's 100% positive hookups. We had a one-way thing. It's coming from below it and hits it, coming over it. Like that one on the, when we were filming for the hunt for the big fish, when he came over and he went down on it,
yeah.
You see that almost never. Yeah. Almost never do you see a fish come up and then go down 10, 20 inches to clobber a fly. coolest heat ever.
Yeah, yeah, it's cool.
Solidified my brain forever. And so when I when I'm out there and I'm fishing, and then I get the opportunity to keep me engaged, you know, the positive hookups just means you win.
Right.
But when you don't get, and it's like, oh, did I hit that and put the fish off? Did he turn around? Did he spin? Whatever,
yeah.
Right? There's a million things to study other than the, that's why I always say you don't learn on the positive.
Right.
If he eats it and you catch it, yeah, you do.
You kind of win, but
you
it's...
But did you really learn much?
It could be negative reinforcement.
Well, if you saw everything and you're like, bitching, did you see that?
Yeah.
I saw him come, I give him a stall, and then I gave him a double stutter, and he just, and he gets cropped, you know, just had to have
it,
right? Or we're just sitting there doing one of these things, and you got it, oh, got one.
Yeah.
When I hear anybody say, oh, got one, I just want to go, out the boat.
It's like,
what do you mean, oh, got one? Were you asleep, dumbass?
Made me laugh so hard down in Chili's the day that we had... had a few the night before, and we're sitting in the boat, and you're talking to the guy just holding the rod like this, and all of a sudden you're on, and you go, ooh, it's like ice fishing. Got one.
I was watching, Johnny and I was talking about the Musky Fools guys. I thought I had it in here. I don't want to screw it. It's the Figure Eight Chronicles, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's the
Could
whole
be.
Thing. So I'm watching them. There's where you get to study eats, right? You get to see, and they've got, if you haven't seen this.
Yeah, the Figure Eight Chronicles.
I don't give a shit if you fish muskies or not. It's some of the coolest footage. And it's the Figure Eight Chronicles, and they just did a season of eats, basically. But it's like, you can watch people that way, where you see how they set, you know, where they pause, when they do things. That's what keeps me going to do, other than I just somehow still love to fish.
Yeah.
I mean,
it comes down to getting enjoyment out of the activity, not the success. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not knocking your skills.
Your dating life.
Yeah. Yes. Fair. Yeah. Just addicted to the game, you know? No, I think, and then the part that I'm sure Kelly is aware of, but probably not as in tune with as I am, is spay casting. This is the answer. It is. How do you, you know...
You see how many musky guys are spay casting?
Are there a lot doing it now? I haven't seen it. I've seen them throwing two-handers over top, but they're doing aerial...
They do a lot of... I don't know about full spay, but they do a lot of, you know...
No, I've seen them throwing, like, shooting heads.
Of spay casting. Yeah.
It's a lot of aerialized back casts and using that bottom hand to help drive those big bugs and lines and stuff.
Those rods came along to cauldron sweep for the first part. I mean, I haven't always made... Long time ago, I had a butt section about that long.
Yeah.
So I could figure eight and
right.
Anyway, like this. I took it like,
yeah.
And stir the pot.
Yeah.
Right? But pretty cool. But anyway, that's pretty digressed. I don't know. I don't. One thing, you know, diversification of your species can sometimes light a spark, but that's not only what you're asking. So.
No, and that's.
I don't know how people like me, because I don't know many people like me that. Still like to fish.
Right.
I mean, truly, I mean, I know a lot of people, but I mean, in the professional game, people that you just don't see many people that still want to go fish. And it's like a lot of guys, just the dry guys, they want to just see the fly eat, right? Well, you don't get that chance all year.
No.
Well, the streamer you do, but I don't know. I don't.
That's what
Madden did that thing. He goes, why didn't that? People always ask him, you know, what it was like working for me and in the day, and why did you finish? Always says the same thing, because he fished more than anybody I've ever seen in my life.
Right.
I mean, always did. And I know people act like I know everything. Nobody does. You never do. I never go out without just like a child's curiosity.
Yeah. Yeah.
I go out, there's times where I go, I'm pretty sure things aren't going to go our way, or they're going to, whatever, where it's like, you know, my enthusiasm. Certain things happen, whatever the pressures and the things in the world that happen and the lunars and everything are not in your favor. And you kind of go, you know, and yeah, you're not Johnny,
right?
Mr. Enthusiasm for every second of his life.
Dr. Optimist.
Yeah. So, you know, but I'm still digging it and hoping to see one thing and pick it up. But You just can't fish that much, but at some point you just gotta like to go.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the two things I wanted to mention are, one, when you're talking about the eat, I always think about moments where I've been out in the boat, and I have done it too, but it's more vivid in my memory when someone else does in the boat, and you hear them go, like, "Oh yeah!" like the Kool-Aid man bursting through the wall or something, some big display of emotion, and you're like, "Oh, they must have a big one." And then it's 16-inch brown trout. You're like, "Oh, but you should have seen the eat."
Yeah.
That's the emotion we're trying to capture, right? So it's paying attention to that stuff. And then the other part, I mean, I've referred to this specific podcast with Tracy Allen on the River Rambler a number of times, but one of the things that hit me in it is they were talking to each other, both very accomplished anglers, have, you know, been around the world, whatever. I can't remember his name, but he hosts the River Rambler podcast. And they're talking about saltwater, permit fishing, tarpon, snook, all this stuff. And Tracy goes, "Yeah, I just don't care about it. Not for me." And the other guy goes, "Yeah, me neither. I don't care. I want to stand."
Listen to Andy and I know the kid too.
Wait, here, let me finish this real quick. Yeah. The point of what he said is, I want to be in a river with water rushing past me. Mm-hmm. That's what does it for them. And I'm sure there's a bunch of salt guys who hear that and go, "These guys are crazy. They want to stand in the rain, cold weather." But I feel that way. I like that water just rushing past my legs.
I was thinking this. God, I feel terrible. It's his last podcast that they did. It's from Henry's Fork. Anyway.
On the Millhouse?
Yeah.
Is the kid wearing the green Yankees hat?
I don't know. Blonde kid.
Yeah.
Great kid, really nice guy. But he just asked him, he says, about tarpon.
Yeah.
And he goes, "Yeah, I'll do it." You know, but he's a permit guy.
Yeah.
And he had this great, and we don't get that opportunity to look at our fish like that. He goes, "You know, when you look at a tarpon, you see a tarpon, you're just like, I'm going to eat something. You look at a permit, he looks like he's thinking about something."
Yeah, I like that.
I thought, that is such a
great. Sean McKay?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sean McKay.
And I was like, "Holy shit, that is such a great." But then Andy says, "So, tarpon?" He goes, "Yeah, I'll do it." But he really didn't give a shit. You can tell he's just like, and that's what everybody has to find.
Right.
You have to find.
You find your niche, something you like.
What makes you want to keep going and going? It doesn't mean it's going to keep going either. But so far, it's the ripe old age I am, it's still going. Jack Ford. Jack right. Ford, 85 years old, still wants to fish.
I mean, I look at the
30 hours.
The folks who stay in our trailer park.
Yeah.
Over half of them are over 70 plus.
All of them.
I mean, and they spend 6 months a year here.
Yeah.
Fishing the same waters.
Every day.
Every day. So there's got to be something about it.
Yeah.
Right. Just capture certain folks. All right, let's wrap this one up. You got anything you're pissed off about?
No.
I think I dodged a bullet there.
not too much.
All right. Well, then let's wrap this one up.
Government mules. That was the, somebody said you should pick
government mule. Yeah.
I thought Eric did.
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Warren Haynes. Yeah. He's a stud.
There's another one though. The Cowboy Junkies. I liked that.
Oh.
That chick singing. I can't remember the Sweet Jane.
Hmm.
Oh my God. But I think I did government mules before.
Yeah, I think you did.
I don't think I did Cowboy Jim, but I might have.
I'm going to go with, I've done John Prine probably twice already, but I've been listening to so much John Prine the last week. He's so good. He's just the best.
I'm pissed about the guy that left the freaking, I think he did it for me. Somebody did it at the supermarket last night.
What?
Left that freaking cart out.
Oh, somebody left one out just to piss you off?
Oh, yeah. I'm wondering.
Oh, they know.
I'm wondering, right? Otherwise, I just wanted to find that car.
You just put a sticker on your car so you don't put your cart back. I'll shoot you.
I can't believe it. I think it was a setup.
You don't know how many people, I mean, I at this point, probably hundreds across my Instagram and the shop one have sent in videos of the cart, what's it, the cart cop or the cop cart police or somebody or whatever his name is, and then all sorts of random stuff. Yeah, it's
you
good.
You think you're special?
Yeah.
Do you think you're...
Yeah. What do you? Why can you do that? No one else. Yeah. All right. Let's wrap this one up. Very special guest next episode. We're going to maybe keep it as a surprise. But yeah, it'll be super fun. So look forward to next week.